Sunday, August 10th, the ninth Sunday after Pentecost. The epistle from the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians, chapter 10, verses 6 through 13. Brethren, let us not covet evil things, as they also coveted. Neither become ye idolaters, as some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed fornication, and there fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them tempted, and perished by the serpents. Neither do you murmur, as some of them murmured, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happen to them in figure, and they are written for our correction, upon whom the ends of the world are to come. Wherefore he that thinks himself to stand, let him take heed lest he fall. Let no temptation take hold on you, but such as is human. And God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that which you are able, but will make also with temptation issue, that you may be able to bear it. Haydock Commentary. What happened to the Israelites of old was done and written to teach us what we may expect if we imitate the murmurs, infidelities, ingratitude, and disobedience of them. Unless we renounce our irregular desires, unless we mortify our passions, baptism and communion will prove our greater condemnation. The greatest graces are but subjects of alarm unless our life correspond with them. He that thinks himself to stand, let him take heed lest he fall. This regards the doctors and teachers in the new church of Corinth, who, relying upon their own learning, did not think themselves weak, and presuming too much upon their own strength, exposed themselves to the danger of falling. Self-diffidence is the foundation of our strength. We prevent many dangerous falls when we keep close to the earth by humility. Let no temptation take hold on you but such as is human. The sense of these words is obscure. We may expound them by way of prayer. Let no temptation but such as are of human frailty and not hard to be overcome happen to you. God will make also with temptation issue, that you may be able to bear it. The literal signification of the Latin compared with the Greek is that God will bring you off and make you escape out of those dangers when you are tempted. The most violent temptations are occasions of merit and triumph to such as are in the hands of God, whilst the lightest temptations are snares and a deep abyss to such as are in their own hands. The Gospel from Luke chapter 19, verses 41 through 47. At that time, when Jesus drew near to Jerusalem, seeing the city, he wept over it, saying, If thou also hadst known, and that in this thy day the things that are to thy peace, but now they are hidden from thy eyes. For the days shall come upon thee, and thy enemies shall cast a trench about thee on every side, and beat thee flat to the ground, and thy children who are in thee. And they shall not leave in thee a stone upon a stone, because thou hast not known the time of thy visitation. And entering into the temple, he began to cast out them that sold therein, and them that bought, saying to them, It is written, My house is the house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. And he was teaching daily in the temple. Haydock Commentary. Regarding Christ's weeping, St. Epiphanius tells us that some of the Orthodox of his time, offended at these words, omitted them in their copies, as if to shed tears were a weakness unworthy of Christ. But this true reading of the Evangelist is found in all copies and received by all the faithful. Neither do these tears argue in Jesus Christ anything unworthy of his supreme majesty or wisdom. Our Savior possessed all the human passions, but not the defects of them. The Stoics, who condemned the passions in their sages, labored to make statues or automata of man, not philosophers. The true philosopher moderates and governs his passions. The Stoic labors to destroy them, but cannot affect his purpose. And when he labors to overcome one passion, he is forced to have recourse to another for help. Our Savior is said to have wept 6 times during his life on earth. First, at his birth, according to many holy doctors. Secondly, at his circumcision, according to St. Bernard and others. Thirdly, when he raised Lazarus to life, as is related in John chapter 11. Fourth, in his entry into Jerusalem, described in this gospel. Fifthly, during his agony in the garden just before his apprehension, when, as St. Luke remarks, his sweat was as drops of blood trickling down upon the ground. And sixthly, during his passion, when he often wept on account of his great distress of mind, occasioned principally by the knowledge he had of the grievousness of men's sins, and the bad use they would make of the redemption he was through so many sufferings procuring for them. What can be more tender than the words here made use of by our Savior? Didst thou but know how severe a punishment is about to be inflicted upon thee for the numberless transgressions of thy people, thou likewise wouldst weep. But alas, hardened in iniquity, thou still rejoicest, ignorant of the punishment hanging over thy head. Just men have daily occasion to bewail, like our blessed Redeemer, the blindness of the wicked, unable to see, through their own perversity, the miserable state of their souls, and the imminent danger they are every moment exposed to, of losing themselves forever. We ought to imitate this compassion of our blessed Redeemer. And as he wept over the calamities of the unfortunate Jerusalem, though determined on his destruction, so we ought to bewail the sins not only of our friends, but likewise of our enemies, and daily offer up our prayers for their conversion. The days shall come upon thee, and thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee on every side, and beat thee flat to the ground. Christ's prophecy here is a literal description of what happened to Jerusalem under Titus in the year 70.